Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
067 The Fan. Fired up to get to talk to Sam Fortier on the BetQL guest line. Sam wrote a really cool story last week about kind of some of the differences fans should expect in Eric Bieniemy's offense. We welcome Sam now on the BetQL guest line. Of course, you can follow Sam at Sam4TR. Does a great job covering the Commanders for the Washington Post. Sammy, what's up, buddy? How are you?
I'm doing well, man. It's good. I'm going to spend 4 days with you this week instead of just three.
What's the fourth?
Well, I assume you'll be there for all 3 days of minicamp.
Yo, and today and we're talking.
Today is the fourth. Yeah, exactly.
Sure.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's great. Great news. Dude, so I'm going to start by complimenting you. I think when you get deep into people, I think people misuse the term analytics far too often. I think the work you do when you get into formations and motion and play calling, I don't think that stuff's really necessarily analytical. It's just like digging in deep, especially on the formation stuff. And I think you do a really good job with it. And I know the boys in Ashburn will give you a hard time sometimes about being overly number driven, but I would say ignore them, because I think the story you wrote last week about Bieniemy's offense was really, really interesting. And I was hoping you could take the listeners and maybe haven't read it yet, kind of through the highlights of what to expect and what will be different.
Yeah, we're being far too nice to each other this morning, but I will say I appreciate that. And I think the first way to think about this is that you've heard us, you know, maybe you, it's me, it's somebody else. You've heard a lot of people say, hey, in this offense, Eric Bieniemy is going to move guys around. And you might think to yourself, oh, well, how is that really different from what Scott Turner was doing? Because both of these guys, Scott Turner and Eric Bieniemy, use a bunch of pre-snap motions. The guys are running all over the field before the snap a bunch. But the thing that's different, if you really dig in and look at what these guys do, is that Eric Bieniemy he changes the pre-snap alignment, particularly of his receivers, quite often. So if you look at it, last year, Scott Turner had Jahan Dotson and Terry McLaurin lined up out wide more than 70% of the time. Curtis Samuel was in the slot more than 70% of the time. If you go look at the Chiefs, what they did with their receivers, of the six guys that had a target last year, five of them did not line up in out wide or in the slot more than 60% of the time. So that just tells you, like, he's using motion a bunch, but he's also saying, okay, Mecole Hardman or Kadarius Toney or whomever I got that has this skill set, like, I'm bouncing you inside and out so that defenses can't really get a read on what you're doing. And Travis Kelce, obviously, he doesn't have a Travis Kelce here, but Travis Kelce really typified that approach because, you know, it's something like 37% in the slot, 37% in line, 25% out wide. So he really, you know, uses these guys to shift you around, give you different looks, not just in the motion, but also where you're at pre-snap.
So knowing that and knowing the variety that creates, who does that benefit the most on the Commanders?
I think it could be one of two guys. I mean, Curtis Samuel was the gadget guy last year, right? You saw him go into the backfield a bunch. Antonio Gibson obviously has that receiver skill set. So he could, you know, be out, you know, running a lot more routes this year, particularly with the loss of J.D. McKissic and the addition of Chris Rodriguez. I think, you know, Randy Jordan, the running backs coach, pushed back on that when I, you know, talked to him on Thursday about, hey, you know, this makes sense to me. Is that how you guys are looking at it? He was like, look, man, like we're just trying to learn the offense right now to give EB the flexibility to move these guys around. But I mean, I think also the short answer is it could benefit everyone. Like at practice the other day, we saw Jahan Dotson in the backfield where he took no snaps last year. So I think that EB is really saying, okay, I'm giving every dude a chance to do a little bit of every role. And from what I see on tape, we can then, you know, shift our approach. I mean, You saw it the other day. Terry McLaurin was running zone read at one point. Like, you know, and a bunch of other guys were too. So I think he's really got everything on the table right now, and he's going to drill down as we get to camp.
One thing that I think it was in your story that I read, and just, you know, kind of eye test tells you this, watching the Chiefs offense, the use of 13 personnel. That means three tight ends on the field with one back. We didn't see a ton of that. When we did, it was kind of like a goal line specific formation. EB runs that stuff kind of all the time. Obviously, they lost Armani Rogers, and let's be real, they don't have Travis Kelce. Travis Kelce's one in a billion. What do you think could be the increased role for tight ends, productivity, all that this year?
Well, this is the really interesting question to me, JP, because it's like, is he going to necessarily bring over the tight end stuff? Like, is Logan Thomas going to move around as much as Kelce does? I don't think that EB was necessarily saying, this is representative of my philosophical belief in tight ends, right? Like the amount he used 13 personnel. It was just like, hey, we have Fortson and Kelce and some of these other guys who are really talented, and this is the best way to do it. So I wonder, okay, you have those three receivers that are really good in Washington. You have a good complement of running backs. Are we going to see more 12? Are we going to see more 21? Like, you know, kind of how does he adapt it to Washington? I don't think that EB entirely knows yet. I still think we're in the experimentation stage. But if he does continue to have 13 personnel and use it as much as he does, maybe it's Curtis Hodges. You know, I think Cole Turner has looked pretty good this spring. What can you do with Thomas and Bates? I think that he has the personnel to do 13, but I don't know if that's ultimately going to be what's best for the team. And it could be, you know, it could change week to week, obviously, depending on opponent.
For sure, for sure. And I think it's really important that we all kind of recognize that this thing is extremely early in the process. And I think we saw a little bit of that. I don't know if you agree, but there was a little bit of a it's almost silly to say it was a step forward and then a step back. But I don't think Howell looked that impressive last Wednesday when we were out there. And I think there's going to be a lot of learning curve over the next – I mean, we'll see the next 3 days. Then they get a big old break, and then we're back there late July. How fast do you think this offense can get it together?
That's going to be the question of the season, I think, particularly early on. I mean, Ron Rivera's teams are not known for starting fast. And obviously when you come out of the gate and you have the early schedule that you do, you know, leading off with Arizona without Kyler, I think, like, you got to start fast and you got to get it together. And this kind of goes to the question, and I don't know if we have the answer here either, but how long is the leash on Sam Howell? I think that Sam Howell, like you said, has had some really promising moments, but he's also had moments where you're like, oh, this dude's only thrown 19 passes in the NFL. Like, he looks a little green right now. And so you got to wonder, and they, I don't think they know the answer to this, but at what point would you say, hey, Jacoby Brissett might be our guy, or you know, do you start splitting reps, or how do you approach it? Because obviously right now they're all in on Sam Howell. But is he going to be a guy that's capable of spitting out the language like they have him mic'd up? Is he going to be the guy that's capable of getting everybody on the right page and leading this offense where it needs to go? Because that is going to be a huge component in determining is the season going to be a success or not.
Well, it's interesting, and tell me if this analogy makes sense, but the Caps with Laviolette, you can argue late in the season, didn't go to these young guys to get them some work, to get them some looks so they could both evaluate and like rapidly accelerate the player development. I think with Ron and Jack and even Eric, like with these dudes that are, I mean, this ownership thing is coming. There's serious evaluations going down this season. And how long can you go with a young guy if you also feel like you have to win?
That is maybe the most interesting question to me because, you know, Eric Bieniemy, for all the control that he has gotten, and I think that, like, if you're Eric Bieniemy, you say, okay, you know, I'm coming here. Everybody knows I'm running the show. Ron's talking about how I'm running the show, especially on offense. Like, everybody knows that this offense is going to be a reflection of you. And Eric Bieniemy, if it doesn't go super well, could obviously say, you know, I didn't have a great, you know, I didn't have an established quarterback in Sam Howell. But, like, this is a reflection of him. And I think that he and Ron Rivera are not going to hesitate to push all of the buttons they need to push to get this thing where they feel like it needs to be, especially EB. I mean, you've seen him. He's a strong personality out there on the field. So if they know, you know, I think personally, I'm not entirely closing the door on Jacoby Brissett starting week one. I'm not saying that's going to happen, but if they get to camp and Jacoby Brissett looks better and EB sits down, you know, in week three or whatever, and he says, I really think Jacoby's giving us the best chance to win. Like, I don't think he's hesitating to push that button. What about you?
I think it'll be a little bit longer of a leash because, and perhaps I'm too jaded with this stuff, I think for the coaching staff, they will have a better long-term opportunity if, let's say they go 7-10, right? But they but they show, hey, we got this young kid. He really grew a lot. We think we could push through next year. I think that keeps their job. Whereas if they go 7-10 and they bench Howell and they go to Brissett, what do you got? What do you got to sell there? Like a journeyman veteran, you know, fringe QB1 guy. We were able to win some games. I just think it's such a different scenario.
Yeah, I think to me, the bar to keeping your job is a lot higher because I guess I am struggling to see a world in which 7-10 also reflects tremendous growth for Sam Howell. And I guess, you know, maybe I'm putting too high expectations on the kid, but like, I think you got to at least improve on last year. I think you got to at least make the playoffs for Josh Harris to say, hey, you know, like Ron Rivera, EB, these are our guys moving forward. I don't know if you have to win a playoff game. I think you might have to, but, and I'm not saying that should be what's expected of Sam Howell in year one as a first-time starter, but I think you and I both think that the bar is really high for Josh Harris to want to keep this regime around and not do his own thing.
I agree with that for sure. I mean, I think above all else, he's going to bring in his own football boss. And what happens after that, we'll see. But I definitely think he's going to bring in a new boss of football. Like, if you just look at how they've run the Devils, the Sixers, like, they hire somebody to run the actual sport operation and give them what seems like a pretty big leash. And I think that's going to happen at 7-10 or at 10-7, frankly.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think then that person, if they're empowered to make decisions, if you go 7-10, I don't know what the world looks like in which you say, oh, you feel great about Sam Howell's development, but you also only win 7 games. I think, like, I mean, what
so
does that look like
here's
for
my
you?
Scenario for that, and I've people don't like this, but if you look at the fluctuations of the defensive rankings for the Commanders in Ron's time, Jack's time, when they played a lot of bad quarterbacks, the defense performed well. I mean, the numbers back it up. Look at 20 and then look at last year. In 21, when they played a lot of good quarterbacks, the defense, the rankings were middle of the pack or lower. Like, I just think if you look at the last two seasons, they went from 31st in the NFL at getting third down stops to first in the NFL at getting third down stops. And I can't help but think playing against Sam Ellinger and Davis Mills really helps that. And if you look at last year, they got to play the AFC South. This year, it's the AFC East. Like, I just think defensively, I don't expect it to look the same. Maybe it'll be better. They added some stuff in the secondary, which I want to ask you about. But so the 7-10 this year could be the defense takes a step back. Offensively, we're better, and we think it could continue to grow. That's my theory of how 7-10 could look good enough for everybody to stick around. Odds are it won't. Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, the overwhelming odds are that won't be the case.
Right, but if you're losing, like last year when you lost, it was like we're scoring 17 points a game, we're scoring 12 points in that Giants game. Like,
right.
Like we're not getting it done. But if Sam Howell is putting up, you know, 35 points in a loss for a couple, you know, one or multiple times, it's like, all right, like we feel good about this guy's ability to put up points. I can see that. I still think it's really unlikely, but I can see where you're coming from now.
That's just kind of the theory. Something else I wanted to talk to you about. I don't want to speak for you. Have you been impressed with Forbes in the little bit we've seen?
Yeah. I mean, I know that the handsy stuff is a thing, but to me, like, the instincts look for real. And, like, when he was battling with Terry and Jahan, especially those two PBUs, I want to say that were, like, they were maybe consecutive reps or you know, it was really close together. Those two PBUs we saw last Wednesday were really impressive to me. And I think that, like, his ability to stay – you know, like right on somebody's hip to be sticky and man. But also, you know, I think his vision in zone, like he is as scheme diverse as they said. You know, obviously it's, you know, not 100%. They're not hitting. It's not live. But like, I think that he has, in the time that we've gotten to watch him, he seemed to be as advertised. Not to buy into the late May, early June hype, but like, I've been impressed.
I'm with you. Same here. And I've been impressed to a point that I didn't expect to be, honestly. And one thing that always stands out to me with rookies that impress at the combine is, okay, that's cool, but is it game speed or is it just straight line with tennis shoes on speed? And I think we've seen enough from him to say that it's real speed, like it's game speed, and I find that particularly encouraging. What do you think of, like, dude, you just used the 16th overall pick on this guy. This guy's going to be an outside corner. Like, that's just what contracts and draft status and speed and everything we've seen, that's what we know. And yet they want him, they want to throw a million things at him, and that is pretty much the way they handled it. I mean, they did it with Jamin. They did it with Jahan. Maybe it makes more sense with receivers, especially now in EB's offense where guys are going to move around all the time. What do you think of just kind of theoretically, okay, we've got this long, rangy, speedy corner. He clearly is best suited to play on the outside, but we're going to throw everything at him. What do you think of that philosophically?
I think it's okay, particularly because if there's an injury situation and you feel like your best three corners include Emmanuel in the slot, like you don't want it to be, you don't want week three to be the first time he's ever played in the slot. I get it. I do think that there is a very big difference between putting Jamin at Mike and him making the calls and putting Emmanuel between the slot and the outside. And I think the biggest thing is in college, Jamin took 800 snaps. Emmanuel Forbes took 2,200. Like the experience that they had in college and what they were able to see, those put them on vastly different, you know, landscapes coming into the NFL. So I think Emmanuel is a little bit more equipped to handle it. And I would also say, you know, slot and outside corner are not as mentally and communicatively as demanding as middle linebacker. But I think that I'm fine with it right now. But if this guy is starting, you know, in the slot come week one, which I don't expect, but if that were to be the case, that would be, I think, a misuse of resources to me, particularly because your two outside corners last year were Kendall and Benjamin, and you said those guys were not good enough with ball skills where we needed to go out and use the 16th pick on a corner. So why would we be running that back at a position, especially where the 16th pick would not be taking 100% of the snaps, or at least close to the volume of snaps that you would if you were outside versus the nickel? So I get what they're doing. It's cross-training. It's just, you know, getting him acclimated and saying, hey, this is what it looks like. But I don't see it as a legitimate in-game strategy barring injury.
I think that's fair. Yeah, I just think these are young players learning the league. Like, just let them learn one thing and not mix it up already. But I could be wrong. They are NFL professionals, and I'm a talking head, right? So it is different there.
But to your point, if I can jump in here, like it reminds me of last week we were talking to Percy Butler, right? And Percy Butler was saying, like, you know, what is the biggest difference? Why did you have an interception last week? And he was like, oh, because I understand what I'm doing now. Like last year, I had to learn three positions. And like, that was really difficult. And so I was thinking pre-snap, I was always thinking, what do I have to do? Rather than looking at the offense and saying, okay, this is their split, this is the formation, this is what I need to do. And he said it took a full year where he wasn't even playing that much for him to get acclimated to all those different things. So that I feel like is almost a testament to your point.
Well, and you know, to defend them, not that they need defending, but Butler is also a little bit more of a tweener. You weren't sure if he's a safety, is he a slot guy? You know what I mean? Like it's, and he was, correct me, fourth rounder. So maybe you're willing to experiment a little bit more than your first rounder. But yeah, like that's kind of what I'm saying here is let's just, your head is already spinning coming to the pros because you've never seen game speed in action like you're now seeing. And we can talk about the SEC is the best college football division, and it is, certainly. It's still not the pros, period. So maybe these guys already have so much going on. They got to find an apartment. They got a million things going on in their lives. Just simplify it rather than, you know, put it in a microwave.
The real test of this to me will be training camp. Like, if he continue to play in the slot in training camp, I think cross training, as we talked about, is one thing. But if you continue to do that and say, hey, you know, this is, because I do believe that they legit believe that the size is not a concern. That they believe he can, you know, defend the run and be inside and be in the mess in the slot in real games. But you know, like we're talking about, there's one thing about can and there's one thing about should.
Right, I'm with you there. Last thing, and as much as the quote got mocked when Ron talked about roster building, I think this is their best roster since Ron's been here. Like, I do think he's built this thing pretty well, especially by fortifying the secondary with these young guys now. Do you agree with that? And what are the biggest questions? Because I know what mine are.
I would agree with you. I'd say this is as complete, as deep, as talented a roster as he's had. And I think the number one thing about that is I feel much better about the floor of quarterback play this year than I ever have. Fitzpatrick going into that, like, I think you thought, okay, you know, this will be all right just because Fitzpatrick had such an extensive history of dropping into offenses and still being relatively productive. But when you look at, I mean, Sam Howell, I think, you know, as much as we want to talk about, oh, he's going to be this, he's going to be that, no one knows. And I think his ceiling is high.
Nobody knows.
His ceiling could be high. His floor could be really low. But I feel really good about Jacoby Brissett in terms of, like, you know, there's just, you just know what you're going to get out of that guy. And I think that it's a higher floor than Taylor Heinicke. And so with him as your number two, as much as I thought Taylor had it, as much as I loved watching him play, I think that Jacoby just brings a certain elevated floor. And so when you talk about all the other talent, sure, but the quarterback position, I think, is shored up more this year. And so that, to me, you know, famous last words as someone who's been covering this team for 4 years and it's been up and down the whole time, but I feel better about it.
What's interesting with Brissett is I really view him as like an Alex Smith light. Like, not going to be spectacular. There's not a lot of big plays, but he'll protect the football. And I think if there's one thing that gets Howell benched early, I think they really want to be patient and let him grow, but if there's one thing that's going to get him benched early, it's turnovers. And Brissett won't do that. There's enough of a book on this dude to know that, listen, there's not going to be a lot of 400-yard passing games, but there's not going to be a lot of 4 INT games either.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Mike Martz, the former NFL coach, broke it down the other day. I can't remember. He did a video on Howell. And one of the things that he said was Howell's biggest weakness in college, which I think, you know, he backs up if you talk to his coaches, if you talk to his teammates, is sometimes he would predetermine decisions. Like, oh, I'm looking at this pre-snap. I'm definitely, you know, I'm hitting up the seam against cover two or something like that. And so, you know, obviously you want him to improve on that, but I think that is a thing that could lend itself to turnovers, particularly against, we're talking about the speed. He's seen it now, but I think there is a big difference in, like, you know, okay, this defense is disguising a coverage in a game versus being in practice even. So I think that is something where I want to see him grow, is not predetermining those decisions or not tucking and running if his first read isn't there or second read isn't there. Like, you got to really go all the way through. And that's something we're certainly seeing EB hammer him on early in camp.
And he'll get baited into stuff if he's making that. Like, it's funny because you got to balance it. You want pre-snap determinations based on coverages and where you see safeties moving, but you can't lock in, and you can't lock in with your eyes especially. Sammy, thank you, buddy. I'll see you tomorrow.
Of course, JP. Always good talking to you, man.
All right, Sam Fortier. You can follow him on Twitter and Instagram at Sam4TR. We know those subplots going on with the Commanders. We know questions about how Chase Young, Montez Sweat back at practice. We know their subplots. What about the rest of the NFL? Because everybody's got minicamp and everybody's got to be there. You better not go anywhere.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.